The principles of religion by which one can actually understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead are called Bhagavat Dharma. In this narration, therefore, which deals with these principles, actual transcendence is properly described. So you can repeat the principles of religion. By which one can actually understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead are called Bhagavata Dharma. In this narration, therefore, which deals with these principles, actual transcendence is properly described. Deal with computers and give quiet at the same time. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Through the principles of religion, one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Brahman, the impersonal feature of the Supreme Lord and Paramatma, the localized aspect of the Lord. When one is conversant with all these principles, he becomes a devotee and performs Bhagavata Dharma. Prahlad Maharaj, the spiritual master in the line of disciplic succession, advised that this Bhagavat Dharma be instructed to students from the very beginning of their education. Komara acharet pragyu dharmam bhagavatang ya. To understand the science of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the real purpose of education. Shravanam kirtanam vishnuho. One must simply hear about and describe Lord Vishnu and his various incarnations. This narration concerning Prahlad Maharaj and Lord Nrsingadev, therefore, has properly described spiritual transcendental subjects. So, dharmo bhagavatanam cha bhagavanyena gamyate okyane smin sabham natam atyatmikam asheshataha. So, Om Maganat Tamadandasha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Un Meditam Yena Tasmai Shikurave Namaha. So here the word Dharma is being described, so Bhagavat Dharma. So the word Dharma actually is translated in different ways. Sometimes it means religious principles, sometimes it means that principle which sustains or is inseparable from an object. Like Prabhupada would often say that the dharma of fire is heat and light. So, in other words, it's something that is inseparable from our lives, something that is inseparable from service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's the definition of dharma. But actually, how do we understand what is dharma? And what is V-Dharma, or Yes Dharma? It's a very interesting point, because it simply can't be understood just by reading the Vedic literatures. Of course, the Mahabharata states this, that Targo Pradishta Shutina Navina, that the Vedic literatures are multifarious. In other words, there's many different directions in the Vedic literatures. You go into the Puranas and you have 18 Puranas, 6 are for people in the mode of ignorance. 6 are for people in the mode of passion. 6 are for people in the mode of goodness. Oh, Tulsi, you're there. Good to see you. So therefore, how can one understand what is the right thing to do? And sometimes you find injunctions in the Vedic literatures, you know, that have to be disobeyed in order to be dharmic. It's actually very interesting. For example, I mean, the typical example I often use is like Prabhupada crossing the ocean to preach Krishna consciousness. So the Vedic literature says sannyasi should not cross oceans. And so Prabhupada violated the Vedic principle in order to be dharmic, which is interesting. Because we have all these different injunctions You have all these different injunctions in the Manusamhita, injunctions even in the Srimad Bhagavatam. I mean, the Bhagavatam says that brahmacharya should wear deer skin. So, of course, you don't see many brahmacharyas around nowadays because it's an endangered species. You understand? So, but in the old days, we used to have brahmacharyas. Those are the people who wear saffron, in case you haven't figured that out. And not only that, but sannyasis do. And sannyasis, of course, are not even supposed to wear sewn clothing. So I'm violating injunctions for sannyasis. Sannyasi can't wear a shirt. Sannyasi can't have even stitching on his dhoti. It's not permitted. Why do you think that is? Because he's not supposed to have any ladies touch his clothes. And so basically, an vanaprastha is supposed to wear tree bark. Like when Lord Ram went to the forest, what do you think he wore? Tree bark clothes. I mean, of course, it wasn't that he put on slabs of tree bark on top of his body. And Sita did the same thing. They
clothes were right out of
it. Yeah, they would actually take the little threads out of the tree bark. But it was really rough and itchy. Can you imagine? Ooh, tree bark clothes.
How did they keep them wild for like a minute?
Just like I was just in New Zealand. They didn't give me tree bark clothes in New Zealand, but they bought me this really expensive jumper of merino wool. You've heard of that before? And I put it on, you know, very expensive. I think it was $300 or something like that. And I put it on and itch like hell. I said, return it. And they said, we can't return it. But we can exchange it. So, so the tree bark clothes actually were very, very itchy, uncomfortable. The idea is when you're going to the forest to execute austerities, you shouldn't be comfortable. You should be uncomfortable. So that's the tree bark. And then also with your hair, you know what you would do with your hair when you took vanaprastha? You take the sap of the tree. You ever see sap in a tree?
Yeah.
Did you ever touch it? It gets really sticky. So they would take it and they put it in their hair. And Lord Ram did that. I'm not sure if Sita Devi did. But Ram and Lakshman did that. And so their hair was all just like matted. That's what matted hair is. You know, it's just like matted. It's not combed. Why is that? Because it helps with the principle of false pride. Because if your hair is just like a mess, then you can't spend any time combing it. Like they said, one of the lady's main occupations is combing hair, right? I mean, how many hours a day do you spend combing your hair?
Probably 20 minutes.
20 minutes. So I could chant like 3 or 4 rounds in that period of time. And read a chapter of Bhagavatam. Read a chapter of Bhagavatam. And I mean, that's why Prabhupada said, that we generally keep the hair short because it leads to simple living and high thinking. Or it's nice to have a cool head and warm legs. As Prabhupada said to one reporter who had a short skirt. And yes, why we have a shaved head. So anyway, so there's many different injunctions like that. And how do you know which ones to follow? I mean, even the injunction that you should always tell the truth is not always followed in order to keep Dharma. And I'll give you an example. Several examples. Of course, there's Yudhisthira in the Mahabharata. And Yudhisthira was told to tell a lie. Why? You know why? I'm asking the kids. The adults, of course, know. So there was this person fighting. His name was Dronacharya. He was called Dronacharya because he was born from a pot instead of a mother. There was a pot. He had a father. I think it was Bhadradraja. Anyway, and he popped out of a pot. And Kripacharya and Kripi, his sister, they actually were born out of grass. You know, there was grass anyway. As Mahabharata. Isn't it interesting? So Dronacharya was very, very strong and nobody could defeat Dronacharya in the battle of Kurukshetra. And the only way Dronacharya could be defeated is if
his son
Well, if he gave up the fight. And the only way he'd give up the fight is if he heard Ashwatthama died. And he was very attached to his son. That's natural for a father to be attached to the son. So what happened is that Krishna told Yudhisthira to tell a lie, because everybody would believe Yudhisthira. Yudhisthira was known as Dharma, basically, Dharmaraj, practically. And he would never tell a lie. So Krishna said, tell a lie, and Yudhisthira said, there's music in the background. Yudhisthira said, no, I cannot tell a lie. What's that? Oh, they wanted to hear. Okay.
She's missing out your class.
Okay, so they can listen on the phone. That's good. Hare Krishna. I mean, I'll post it later. So, therefore, Krishna said, tell a lie, and Yudhisthira said, no. I am Yudhisthira, the great truthful one. You don't want me to violate religious principles? And Krishna said, yes. And Yudhisthira said, no. And then Krishna said, you know, kill this particular
elephant
named Ashwatthama. We can put it closer on top of here if you want.
No, I thought I did switch on the speaker. That's fine. Let's switch it on.
Okay. So Krishna said, kill the elephant named Ashwatthama. And the elephant was killed by Bhimsen with his club. One just hit with the club. And then what happened is Yudhisthira was able to say Ashwatthama, the elephant, was killed. And actually Yudhisthira had to suffer for that. His chariot from that point onwards always touched the ground. And he had to see hell because he disobeyed Krishna's instruction. But Krishna was giving an instruction that was different than Dharma. It's interesting, isn't it? Or the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, before the battle of Kurukshetra, Arjuna was asked to do what? To kill who?
His family
and his cousin, brothers, as well as his guru. Can you imagine if Krishna said, kill your guru?
Why?
Who is his guru? Dronacharya. Kill your grandfather. Bhishmadev. Can you imagine, what would you do if Krishna told you, kill your guru and your grandfather?
No.
What would you say? I mean, he said, Krishna, I better worship another, better get a second opinion. Like they go to a doctor, you know, you get a second opinion. And better, I worship another god. You know, maybe Lord Shiva would be better for me, or Durga, or Ganesh. Let me become a Hindu. That's what you would say to Krishna. And Arjuna basically, he had excuses too. He said, let me just renounce the battle. This is sinful. And Krishna said, you know, if you do your duty, you're not going to be overcome by sin, and the duty is Krishna's order. So there you have an example where Arjuna had to do something sinful. Obviously, it's against the Vedic literatures to kill your grandfather and guru, right? I hope so. So Arjuna had to do that. Wow. So you had lying, killing. You're studying the Ten Commandments now, right? Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not bear false witness, right? These are two of the Ten Commandments. And then, you know, honor your family members, your mother and father. So you got all these different things. Because, I mean, in one sense, Dhritarashtra was like his father. Because his father, Pandu, had passed away. So, you know, honor your relatives. So they were violating practically so many of the Ten Commandments, what to speak of Vedic injunctions, yet it was dharmic. It's interesting. So, what's the principle of dharma? I mean, how do you determine if something's dharmic? First of all, let's take the essence of, let's say, Krishna's instructions. Krishna is actually advocating something called, in technical terms, philosophical terms, consequentialism. That's an interesting thing. You know what the word consequence means? What does it mean, Keshav? It means the result of the action. In other words, Krishna is saying what makes a thing dharmic or adharmic is the result of your action rather than the action itself. You understand? So sometimes you can violate a Vedic principle, but the result is good. Like in the case of Yudhisthira, like in the case of Arjuna, like in the case of another story Prabhupada tells about telling the truth, once upon a time, there were some dacoits, and they were chasing a family, and they wanted their money. So they said, or they wanted to kill them or something like that. They were mafiosos. So they were chasing this family, and the family took refuge in an ashram, one of the temples of the Hare Krishna movement. And the dacoits didn't want to attack the devotees. They just went to the temple president and said to the temple, I changed the story a little bit. They said to the temple president, where is this family we're trying to attack? And the temple president said, I cannot tell a lie. That family is inside the brahmachari ashram in the temple. And so the dacoit said, thank you very much, Guruji. And they went into the temple and killed the family. So here was someone who told the truth, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, satya, you have to tell the truth. But he was actually committing an adharma or a vidharma. Do you understand the principle? It's interesting. So he's telling the truth. So, or another point is, like when one has to go into business, Prabhupada said you have to tell a lie when you're in business. Because you have to say, for you, there's no profit. But actually, if you didn't make a profit, then you wouldn't be in business. And you wouldn't be able to support your family. So in other words, you have to at least, maybe not explicitly tell a lie, but implicitly, you have to give people the indication they're getting a bargain. But they're not getting a bargain. They're paying three times as much as you actually paid for the product. And anyway, so that's a type of violation of Vedic principles. So consequentialism means that we have to consider the consequences or the result of a particular action. And the opposite of that is the action itself is religious or irreligious. So this is what Prabhupada followed. Like Prabhupada did things, like we said, going across the ocean, having ladies in the in a Brahmacharini ashram in the temple, which was never allowed in the Gaudiya Math, giving ladies, even gave ladies Brahman initiation, and even gave ladies the Brahma Gayatri. Brahma Gayatri is the first line. You don't know the Gayatri mantras, but that's the one that all the Hindu organizations chant loudly as kirtan. You've heard that? They go, Om Bhurbhuva Svatasuitu Raini Bhargo Divashadimi. You've heard that? I mean, the Brahma Kumaris do that, and so many other organizations do that. So Prabhupada really, and Prabhupada lived with demons who had cat food and dog food in their refrigerator. I mean, you may think that's not so bad, but you know, tinned fish or whatever dog food or cat food there is. Can you imagine going into your refrigerator and seeing meat there, blood and everything like that? So Prabhupada in the beginning days lived with these people. And he cooked in their kitchens. Like Prabhupada went to Butler, Pennsylvania, and he did that, which is prohibited for a sannyasi. I mean, even there's Vedic injunctions that you should not see the face of a non-devotee. And if you see the face of a non-devotee, you're supposed to go to the Ganges immediately and take a bath. You know, jump into the Ganges. So how could you go on Sankirtan? You'd have to take a spray bottle of Ganges water with you all the time. And just go tss, 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 tss. Or be like Gandhari. You understand? With the blindfold on. Would you like a book? That would be interesting. You'd be very effective at preaching if you wore a blindfold. So basically, you know, consequentialism means that we examine what is the result. So in our own preaching of Krishna consciousness, and actually there's the Vedic injunction, palena parichyate. Anyone's heard of that before? What does palena mean? Fruit. Pal, fruit. Like sitafal, right? What is sitafal? Sitafal. That means sita fruit. You never tasted that before? Your whole life is wasted.
It's like something like...
It's delicious.
Custard.
That's called sitafal. You never heard of that before. And there's rampal too.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're very delicious. So in Fiji we have that all the time. So there's palena paracite means the fruit, and then paracite, you should judge. So you judge something by the fruits. In other words, by the result. That is actually the Vedic injunction. So that's how we determine. So in preaching Krishna consciousness, I mean, like we were discussing last night, sometimes one has to adjust certain things. You know, whether you wear dhotis or whether you wear Western clothes. There's no such thing as karmi clothes anyway. Devotees use this expression, karmi clothes.
Yeah.
I mean, do the clothes have karma in them or something like that? I mean, it's so stupid. I mean, it should be Western clothes, Eastern clothes, Chinese clothes. You know, anyway, describe the clothes for what they are, but there's no clothes that are inherently devotional. There's no clothes that are inherently karmic.
I said,
why are you wearing karmi clothes? In other words, you think you become a karmi because you're wearing, look at you, Keisha, you're wearing karmi clothes. Oh, okay. But the kurta is not devotional. It actually comes from Afghanistan. It doesn't come from India. Traditionally, you wouldn't have any shirt. You have a cloth that would wrap around you. So look at you. You're wearing Afghan clothes on one side, on the top. And on the bottom, you're wearing just like
Western.
Well, not even Western. I mean, it's just like, what is that, jeans or whatever it is?
Yeah, it's jeans.
Jeans. So, you know, wow. You become a karmi, an Afghanis karmi. And you're wearing a Punjabi outfit. So you become a Punjabi.
That's why you don't know.
So, I mean, really, what makes something karmic or not karmic or v-karmic or al-karmic is your activities and your consciousness. So in other words, we can adjust certain... So how do you know which... The question is, how do you know which externals to adjust? Or what things to adjust when preaching Krishna consciousness? Or how to judge the result? The Mahabharata teaches us, it says, Tarko Pratishtha Shruti Nandavina, that you can't understand things by simply studying the Vedic literatures or by argumentation and reasoning. You know, just logic and reasoning. But Mahajaniyena Gata Sabanta, that means following in the path or the footsteps of the great souls, like His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. And so that's really how you can understand what's dharmic and what's not dharmic. Rather than just going to the Vedic literature. You go crazy if you just go in the Vedic literatures. I mean, for example, picking up certain books, we were told not to eat carrots, potatoes. Certain temples, it's like that. I mean, if you go into Jagannath Puri, they don't... Potatoes, carrots, root vegetables, like cassava that you're so attached to. You like cassava? I don't like it. Cassava or kava. You know, they don't offer any of those things to Lord Jagannath. Or tomatoes, they don't offer to Lord Jagannath. Why? Because in the Vedic literatures, it says not because they're not from India. Tomatoes are not from India. Potatoes are not from India. It's interesting. Even sugar cane is not from India. Did you know that? 1,000 years ago, there was no sugar cane in India. Of course, they do offer sugar. I mean, I understand that, Jagannath Puri. And so you take all these things, and you become very confused with all these different Vedic injunctions, like the Hari Bhakti Vilas, which has all these injunctions about what to do, what not to do, the fasting this day, fasting that day. I mean, you can go crazy, and then you'll just simply be absorbed in rituals all day long. And then you'll never be able to spread Krishna consciousness. And you're going to be in complete anxiety. I mean, even with Tulsi Devi, if you look at the days that you're not supposed to pick Tulsi Devi, it's not only the Dwadasi, you know, it's different days of the week. I mean, it really gets complicated. And, you know, your injunctions for doing arti are very complicated, so complicated that probably none of us would do arti or take care of deities or take care of Giriraj if we had to say all the mantras and do everything. So, therefore, just to be practical, Mahajaniyena Gata Sapanta, Prabhupada and other acharyas give us the methodology for performing devotional service. And also we judge something by the results. Like Albert Einstein, who's very intelligent. You ever heard of Einstein before? He said he defined insanity. He said insanity means to keep doing the same thing and expect a different result. In other words, let's say we were preaching a particular way in the 1960s and 70s, and, you know, making thousands of devotees, and now we just continue that preaching, and nobody's joining the Hare Krishna movement. So you really have to adjust things. Otherwise, it's insane just thinking, keep doing the same thing, keep doing the same thing, and think that the results will ultimately come. Everybody understands the point? So this is a very important philosophical point. Any questions or comments about these points? It's called consequentialism. You can look it up on the internet. It's actually a whole branch of philosophy dealing with ethics. Ethics, you want to say, ethics means basically what is the right thing, what is the wrong thing, ethical principles. You understand? What is right? What is wrong? And so there's actually studies, even the non-devotees, they study this. What makes a thing right or wrong? Is it the act itself or the consequence of the act? And some people actually say it's the act itself. I mean, some fanatic religionists say it's the act itself, whereas other philosophers say it's the consequences of a particular act. For example, like out of compassion, Prabhupada advocated that people would eat certain types of meat. He said, if you want to eat meat, don't eat a cow. So therefore you should eat a horse or a cockroach or something like that, or a lower creature, Prabhupada said. Or Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was even more attuned to this principle of consequentialism, that he, when he was inviting some English people to come to Mayapur, he arranged that they could eat meat. You know, he actually arranged that there would be a proper situation so they would feel comfortable and be able to eat meat. And even he told his disciples, who were preaching in the Western world, when they said nobody wants to become a vegetarian, then he said, let them eat meat. But get them chanting Hare Krishna. Because he understood by chanting they would ultimately give up eating meat. I mean, it's not that easy for people to give up eating meat because it's highly addictive. There's hormones in the meat. You know what hormones are? Hormones are different chemicals. Let's say when someone takes a drug, you know what addiction is? When they become addicted to a drug, like smoking or something like that? Cigarettes have nicotine. Nicotine is not a hormone. It's something different. It's a chemical. So people become addicted, and when they give up cigarettes, what do? They start shaking. You ever see that? They say, I can't give it up. Whew, like that. It's an addiction. So, people are addicted to eating meat for the same reason. Because they get the hormones and they get withdrawal symptoms. And sugar too. Sugar is actually a big addiction. Sugar is very dangerous for you. Anyway, I better not talk about that. None of you will like me if I say that. But anyway, so forget about what I just said about sugar. So in any case, you have to bring people gradually to Krishna consciousness. Like even Prabhupada was talking to someone who one day would come to the temple as a man, the next day as a woman. Instead of Prabhupada just like blasting him, he said, this is all nonsense. He said, just pick one and stick to it. Because Prabhupada wanted him to be Krishna conscious. Prabhupada understood if he just told him, what are you doing? Just pick one and stick to it. And then, we had one lady come to the temple in our temple in the United States. Her spiritual master had actually rejected her because she was previously a man. And, instead of me just like saying, get the hell out of here, whoever you are, I said, come and you can come and serve Krishna, but just stick to whatever you decided. we don't want to see. It's too confusing to see someone come as a man one day and a woman another day. Like one day you're Keshava, the next day Keshavi. I mean, it'd be very upsetting for me. Wouldn't know how to relate to you. And also in school, it wouldn't be so good, would it? So, we have a new girl in class today. So, so the point I'm making is that, you know, we have to really be thinking of, you know, preaching and bringing people to Krishna consciousness. And Bhakti Siddhanta said, and Prabhupada said, another example is Prabhupada said he wanted a smoking room in the Bombay temple. Not in the temple room, but in the hotel there that's connected to the temple. So, you know, that's the point. Palena Parachiyate. And of course that has to be applied by the Acharyas. You're leaving. He was insulted because I called him Keshavi. Yeah, he's going to change his dress into a sari right now. So that's the point. I mean, compassion. You judge from the results. And what was the result of Prabhupada adjusting things? We have the Krishna consciousness movement. Had he been so, like, fanatic as his godbrothers, we wouldn't even be here today. We'd all be doing such an Orion Kata. Or whatever. Right? So, any questions or comments about any of these points? Yeah.
I heard in a lecture that dhotis are worn in the spiritual world. Is that true?
I don't know. It's not mentioned what they wear in the spiritual world. It's not really mentioned. I mean, I haven't read anywhere that says... There's no word. I mean, how could you know? Because there's no word for dhoti in the Sanskrit language. The closest word is dhota. Which means to wash in Sanskrit. That's where dhobi came from in Hindi. You know dhobi? You know what a dhobi is?
Yes.
He doesn't. You don't know Hindi? What's wrong with you?
From South India.
Oh, so you know Telugu or?
Canada.
That's better. So, but you're right. Even in South India, they talk about dhobis. A dhobi is someone you send your clothes to wash. Oh, you never lived there. Okay, you're very unfortunate. So, you know, you leave your clothes outside your door for the dhobi to wash. So, dhota means like washing, the process of washing, that which is washed. I'm sorry.
Dho means washed.
Yeah, which means that which is washed in Sanskrit. So, I mean, you can wash your dhoti, you can wash your jeans, you can wash your hair. I mean, it can refer to any of those things. That's the closest word you have in Sanskrit or in, you know, any language similar to dhoti.
What's the origin for dhoti? Is it vastra?
What? Vastra is clothes.
What's the origin for dhoti?
It's probably a combination of, you know, the that which is washed. You know, someone said, wash your clothes, and they said, oh, that must be a dhoti. So, or it may come from another language. I have no idea. Ethnologically, I have no idea. But it's not mentioned in the Vedic literatures. We don't really know. I mean, I assume, of course, obviously, I assume it was cloth they were wearing. I mean, assume. And I assume the cloth was, I mean, probably cotton. I mean, cotton actually comes from India originally. Like if you go to any of the, Many nice things came from India. Like if you go to the marketplaces in the Middle Ages or when there was a lot of trade with India, there were so many different cotton goods in the marketplaces that were actually making their way to Europe or to Greece or other places like that. I mean, India was known for its fabrics, both silk and cotton. And it was very valuable. I mean, those are one of the things the traders were coming for. And then later, cotton was brought to America and other places like that where it was cultivated. But cotton is an amazing product. Even today, India produces a great deal of cotton materials. A lot of things came from India. Mathematics came from India. You know, India was the first country that actually came up with numerals for numbers.
And zero,
without sunya. So without zero, there's no computers, there's no decimal system, there's nothing. So India invented zero. That's pretty good. Zero means nothing. So India invented nothing, and it's helping us.
What silk made out of?
Silk is made out of silkworms. That's why I don't need silk. I mean, I don't wear silk. Because it means that millions of worms have to be killed to provide your dhoti. They take the worms, they're in their cocoon. You know what a cocoon is? It means that they make a little thing with silk around them. They turn into a butterfly. And so they put all these cocoons into boiling water and they kill the larva. It's called a larva inside at that particular point, a worm. And then they unravel it. There's certain types of silk called the Hingsa silk, by which they let the larva, the butterfly, come out first, and then they unravel, but it's very hard to find. And usually what they call a Hingsa, which means nonviolent silk, is not like that. It's just a cheating thing. So, India, and then astronomy. I mean, in India there were clocks that could tell time to the second. Thousands of years ago. I mean, these were big clocks. I mean, they're based on the sun and everything like that. So, I mean, India is the source of, and the water, you know, plumbing, modern plumbing came from India. Construction techniques came from India. So many things came from India. And people not properly respecting that in the Western world. They think, you know, everything came from the Middle East, from the Nile Delta or from Greece or from... You know, but it didn't. Actually, originally, even the Pythagorean theory, you know what a Pythagorean theory is? You know, that's A squared plus B squared equals C squared. Anyway, it's a triangulation. That originally came from India, and then, of course, you had Pythagoras who claimed that it was his. Or at least we claim it was Pythagoras's, but it's not. Okay, any other questions? Interesting, yeah.
So we know none of the Vedic literatures tell us what clothes are worn in the spiritual world?
No.
Do we know what...
I mean, they cloth, and, you know, there may be silk described, but someone was wrapped in cloth, something like that, yeah.
Do we know what language is spoken?
Yes, in local Vrindavan it's Brajabhas, and in the rest of the spiritual world it's Sanskrit. But, you know, anyway, you have to learn these languages if you want to go back to Godhead. Not really. They'll be good teachers. I mean, you'll know it when you go there. You don't have to worry about going to school for 12 years to learn Sanskrit. So you can speak in the spiritual world to Krishna. You can always use a translator when you're speaking to Krishna. So, you know, we don't really know what they wore. I mean, I don't think, you know, they wore blue jeans with mobile phones like they had that Bunky Bihari temple.
If we go there, then we can go.
Yeah, but I don't think they use mobile phones. I don't think they use blue jeans. Maybe. I mean, they could. Who knows? But we know Krishna wears a peacock feather. Holds a flute. And Krishna wears yellow clothes. Yellow clothes, and you know, it may be wrapped like a dhoti. I mean, even in India, there's different types of dhotis. You know, there's South Indian dhotis, North Indian dhotis. There's gumshoes. I mean, people just wear long gumshoes sometimes in India. So there's different types of clothes. But a dhoti would be very difficult to wear when you're a kshatriya fighting people, because you trip over it. So it had to be wrapped like pants or something like that. One thing that's funny with all these films, like the Mahabharata and everything, that you find these kings wearing these heavy crowns all day long. I really don't think that they wore it all day long like that. I mean, it's kind of, you know, this big thing on top of the head. You have to balance. I don't even know how the actors acted with those things on their heads. So I'm sure the crowns were smaller. You know, less elaborate, and the clothes were a little more comfortable than wearing like chainmail on your body. All day long. Chainmail is what's worn by a fighter when he goes to fight. Not when he's home with his wife. Because he's not going to fight with his wife. So. Chainmail is like armor. Armor. That's called chainmail. The reason it's called chainmail is made from little chains. Yeah. So it's flexible. If it was just metal plates with no chains, it wouldn't be flexible. So the name for armor is chainmail. One name for armor is chainmail. And so traditionally, you know, the soldiers would always wear armor. And the arrows were so strong they could pierce through the armor. When Arjuna fired arrows, it went right through the armor. And sometimes right through the body and came out the other side. Okay, any other questions? Yes.
When Yudhishthira went through the reaction of lying, what was it? Was it because he didn't...
Well, it was because he didn't follow Krishna's instruction. The Mayavadis say it's because he lied and gave the impression that Ashwatthama was dead. Whereas the devotees know it's because he didn't follow Krishna's instruction when he was first told to follow it. In fact, you know, he did the worst thing. He didn't follow Krishna's instruction, and he lied anyway. In the sense that he said, Ashwatthama, and then low voice, the elephant, is dead. So when you tell the truth in such a way, you're actually lying. Because you're giving people the impression of one thing when something else is true. So he actually ultimately did lie.
Was it Krishna's idea to kill the
Yes. Elephant? Krishna has all the nice ideas. You know, Krishna has so many nice ideas. He's tricky. He doesn't follow any rules and regulations. He broke his promise to protect Arjuna in the Battle of Kurukshetra.
He wouldn't pick up a weapon.
Yeah, he promised not to pick up a weapon, and he picked up the chariot wheel. Twice this happened during the Battle of Kurukshetra. Picked up the chariot wheel. One time he picked up a Sudarshan Chakra. So, and Krishna breaks his promise all the time. That's such a nice person, isn't it? Keeps breaking his promise. But when the devotee promises something, Krishna is duty-bound or bound by love to do what the devotee wants or what the devotee promises. So therefore, we take more seriously a devotee's promise than Krishna's promise. Right? But Lord Chaitanya always told the truth, and Lord Rama always told the truth. Never told a lie. But Krishna is a different person. He's the same person, I'm sorry, but he acts differently. It's interesting, isn't it? We're worshiping a god that cheats, runs around with other people's wives. I mean, he just violates not all the Ten Commandments, but quite a few. He disobeyed his mother.
You shall not covet your neighbor's wife.
Yeah. He knows the Ten Commandments. So he coveted practically all the Brajavasis' wives. The younger wives, that is. So you can analyze the Ten Commandments, and Krishna didn't do such a good job with them. Yeah, thou shalt not steal. Makanchor, you know. Thou shalt not commit adultery, covet your neighbor's wife, don't lie. He's pretty good, isn't he? That's why he's God. Yeah. He's the only one who doesn't have to follow the law. He can even speed without getting a ticket. So any other questions or comments? Interesting. Consequentialism, remember that. That's what determines. Otherwise, you become a ritualistic Brahmin and you could actually commit sin just by following the rules and regulations. Like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was very upset with his disciples who didn't follow his instruction. You know, and they were very ritualistic, very educated, and it probably describes he left this world being disgusted with his disciples. Okay? Okay, I guess that's it. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada.